Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the program today. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We appreciate you joining the program, and if you've got a question during the next half an hour, call that in to 765-496-1999. Send an email to ask@wbaa.org or tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Afternoon, how are you?
I am just peaches and cream. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. How does election season treat you when you're not actually running for something?
It makes me grateful every day that I'm not running right now for something.
But you will be a year from now.
Oh, yeah. But you know, it's really strange. It's when you're on the outside of the election process, when you're not actively, you know, your name's not on a ballot or anything anywhere, you get much more analytical about what you see and what you hear. And there was this old adage that he who has or she who has the most signs wins. I don't think that works that way anymore. You know, I think that the media with all everything that you can do with technology, I think that thing's kind of changed a little bit. The other thing is the commercials. Now, again, I know I'm in a couple commercials and all that kind of stuff.
But which is interesting because you have not endorsed anybody this time around, have you?
Not by going, you know, looky here.
Except for Jason Domkowski. You endorsed Jason Domkowski.
Yeah, I'm a big Jason fan.
And you're in his commercial, but you're also in Sally Segrist and Ron Altings.
Yeah, yeah. But the one with Ronnie was cool. That was the one we did the bug, the insect for the state insect. And Sally, we were just walking up and down State Street pointing at construction stuff, and that ended up in the commercial too. But it's all fine. I mean, I guess that's what we do these days, stand up and wave at your candidate and all. But the thing that's really neat about it now is because we're such a connected community. You just gave me hand signals. I can't understand them. Is this a production issue?
No, not yet. But
for those out there in listening land, it wasn't a bad hand signal. It was a good one. But anyway, we have so much technology now that you can almost see your candidate on a daily basis. You know, they can get posted on YouTube. They can get posted on Facebook. I think Twitter can handle video shots now too. So I think the media has turned a campaign season into 24/7 for the duration of the process.
Well, something for you to prepare for next year. So let me get to a question that comes in from one of our listeners. James has written in, and he has a question about some of the housing, especially around the Chauncey Hill. He says, with all the new high-rises going up on Chauncey targeting undergrads, is there any discussion going on about creating housing in West Lafayette's urban core for young professionals who might be looking to stay in the area after graduation? He says, the Indiana brain drain is real, and urban housing and condominiums would help to keep that young talent here in the urban environment that young grads crave. My wife and I both graduated from Purdue a few years ago, he says. Both work here on campus and would absolutely love to live in such a space within walking distance of everything. So I think he's asking, are you targeting, or are the people who are putting up the high rises targeting one market potentially to the detriment of another?
I don't think so. Obviously, some of the high rises now are focusing towards the college age customer. But the work that's being done on the levee, the work that's specifically being done at Wabash Landing, that whole tear-down rebuild is specific to the young professionals crowd. You know, we feel the connectivity and the proximity to Lafayette, and obviously with the connectivity and proximity to West Lafayette, is exactly the market that the young professionals with families is exactly the market that needs to be targeted. Also, the projects that are being developed on the far west end of campus in Discovery Park, a lot of that is going to have housing options for the young professionals, for young professors, for the employees that are going to be working at some of those facilities that are going out there. So absolutely, we realize that we've got a huge concentration of college kids around here, but that's not the only market we need to attend to.
So let's talk about that general area. We're beginning to see tenants, of course, move out of Chauncey Hill Mall. They've all been given plenty of warning that by the end of next year, that thing's going to start being knocked down and what's going to go up in its place is going to start being constructed. Mm-hmm. We're starting to hear, though, from some of the people who own those businesses, especially the locally owned ones, that they are going to have a hard time, they think, relocating anywhere near where they currently are, which you imagine they located there initially to get lots of foot traffic from campus and things like that. They're saying that what they're going to have to do is go someplace else, and they're trying to figure out whether they're going to be able to afford the new rents that are going to come with that are going to come with whatever the new space is. Mm-hmm. And I was talking when they did the charrette, if you will, a couple of weeks ago, that Lauren King from Trinitas, who owns the building and owns the space, he had something interesting to say, which I want to play for you about whether those people were going to be able to relocate. Here's what he said.
Okay. That's a tough question. I don't know that Trinitas is going to solve that. We will be relying on entrepreneurs that have great ideas and are able to make those great ideas a reality.
And so forgive me for maybe sounding a little cynical about this, but it seems what he's saying is, if you've got money, we're happy to have you locate in the new space. But if not, if you don't have as much capital to spend, good luck. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair read of that?
I certainly hope not. The one thing that I know that is different with the new development as what is now is the space size. You know, a lot of the guys that had businesses in there were renting a much smaller space. So obviously their rents were going to be a little bit lower. And because of the age of the product, that also contributed as well. We always have tried to do as best as we can to not just recruit, but to retain businesses. And we know a lot of the folks that have been up there for quite some time. And we also are aware of the market and the fluctuations in the market, and we're and acutely aware of the changes in choices that their target audience has. The college students, their tastes change almost annually, so we recognize that each year it's a challenge for them to try and meet their bottom line. However, having said that, the hope is that what we bring to this area of our community, this challenge in development, and some of the new investments that are going to be made, would provide them with the outlet to enhance their business product as well. If a store is a niche store, it has a particular market, and it's successful on the level that it is currently, the presumption would be that it could continue to have that success in a larger space with more folks coming in. The rent itself, there's very little we can do about that. We have had ongoing meetings with Trinitas and the companies that are going to be looking to put some investments there. And with some of the designs that are being proposed for that particular corridor, that particular area of Chauncey Hill Mall, it will attract not just folks that are going there for a specific business, but we're going to have outdoor recreation areas and other points of interest that will hopefully bring not just the crowds that they're going to come with some spare change in the pocket, but people that are going to be utilizing those services there at a very high rate.
So, but it seems though a little bit like there's a monetary barrier to entry that is being created or will be created because you're talking about perhaps the most visible mm-hmm. intersection in mm-hmm. all of West Lafayette, in the midst of a corridor in which the city and the university are spending $120 million. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get people to come there, and with more demand comes higher rents and things mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. And so if you are a small jewelry store, a small mm-hmm. Business like CopyMat, which was the subject of several Post-it notes when they did that mm-hmm. charrette, save CopyMat, make mm-hmm. sure it gets to stay there. What do you do if you're a business like that? Do you just say, like the jewelry store is apparently doing, hey, yeah, we're going to have to move to Lafayette?
Here. Yeah. I certainly hope not. We received weekly complaints about the condition of the Chauncey Hill Mall. You know, we were always told that when you come to the top of the State Street Hill, it's such an eyesore, all that stuff.
Oh, there's no question. It's nothing to look at
yeah.
the moment.
And unfortunately, a lot of that exterior appearance is what kind of made it iconic, but it also is what helped keep the rents low. When somebody goes to the trouble of investing in that, I think it's, what is it, 3-plus acre lot, and trying to bring some new life to it, it's going to cost them money. And, you know, as much as we like to say we've got these amazing relationships with developers and that their focus is on what's in the best interest of our community, they also have to make a bottom line as well. And we feel very strongly that we will try to do, as a city, we will try to do what we can to try and encourage those businesses to stay. We don't want anybody to leave because all of a sudden the rent went up. However, when it comes down to it, short of channeling traffic there, short of trying to work cooperatively with the developers to make them aware of some of the historic significance that some of these businesses have, sometimes the market's got a cold heart.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can call 765-496-1999, email ask@wbaa.org, or you can go to WBAA News on Twitter. You know, there were concerns at that week-long series of meetings from some people who said, you're going to get rid of the character of this place. And you alluded to the fact that it looks a certain way, and we heard people say that they were fond of going to whatever bars were in there when they were students. And that's all fine and good. But at the same time, you're looking like there's going to be new rents that are going to change the character. And certainly it's going to look much nicer when it gets done in a couple of years. But as we alluded to, it's potentially forcing people across the river or elsewhere. And you and Mayor Wisworski on this program are very fond of saying how you don't feel like you compete very much against one another, that you view it as Greater Lafayette. But I can't help but think that this is stoking some economic competition, because you're going to have it's going to be much more expensive to locate in downtown West Lafayette than it is just across the river in downtown Lafayette. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you've got, I don't know if you're going to have haves and have nots, but you're going to have a couple of very different feelings, and you're going to have businesses who are deciding to go one place or the other. And do you think it's going to put you in competition more with each other?
No. And the only reason why I say that is because each city, as close as Tony and I are, and as much as we want people to feel that it's one large metropolitan area, some of us do things better than others. Some of us have a particular product line that's conducive for our population base. When you look at downtown Lafayette, it is a structured, historic downtown that stretches for six blocks. I mean, it's or nine blocks. It's got a lot of stuff that would never fit in West Lafayette. They have businesses that have been there forever. The size of the businesses were, you know, appropriate 50, 100 years ago, not so much now. When you look at, say, a shoe store, there's a guy I go down to in Lafayette to get my shoes fixed. And it's not much. I mean, it's a storefront with a counter, and then all the way back, it's about 25 feet wide, and then it goes all the way back to the alley. And it's been there forever, and it's exactly what it needs to be for that kind of product. And I know that they do decent business. I mean, they can live off the money that they make with the business. Try and pick that up and put it in West Lafayette somewhere. It just wouldn't fit. But the same thing applies for housing products. The same thing applies for rental rates. It's a different concept, even though we're only separated by about 300 feet of river. But again, Tony and I have always been pulling on the same side of the rope when it comes to development. We know what fits in which city. And we've always said that West Lafayette, again, is predominantly treetops and rooftops, and you don't see many smokestacks, whereas Lafayette's an advanced manufacturing community where you see a lot of that. We recognize that, and when we are recruiting, one of the things that people really find pretty interesting about us is that there's two guys, different political parties, who get along like brothers and pull on the same side of the rope, and I think that benefits both sides of the river.
Let's get back to what James was asking a minute ago. He was asking about whether there are going to be spaces for young professionals who have just graduated from college, things like that. We've been doing some research into the costs of the high-rise apartments that have been going up there. Mm-hmm. And there are some of them that, if you look at the total cost of an apartment, approach $4,000 a month, more than $900 a month per four occupants.
Yeah.
That's expensive.
That's salty.
That's, I would say, I haven't researched the entire housing market, but if those aren't the most expensive apartments in Greater Lafayette, I don't know where else they would be. Mm-hmm. And so I think the point still stands that you're looking at, you've got kind of the haves and the have-nots. You're very expensive in this neighborhood at the top of Chauncey Hill, and clearly the market is going to determine what all of that will bear. But is an unintended consequence of this that there are going to be people who are not just necessarily turned off by it, but people who say, look, I can't go there anymore to get lunch on a weekday when I work at Purdue, or you're going to have a very insular community of people who live in and work and play and spend, or perhaps more to the point, in that neighborhood. I mean, are you building kind of a city within a city of the people who can afford to live in this area where you're doing all of the improvements?
I don't think so, Stan. I, you know, think about what we're talking about here. Let's just focus on the college students for now. Purdue University, you know, when you go outside the scholarship and incentive programs, across the board is relatively competitive when you look at the tuition rate, but it's higher than a lot of college campuses. I went to Indiana State, and the reason why I went to Indiana State was because I had to pay for my own college. My dad said, no way, if you're
going
to go to school.
One of the you're not wrong about that, but one of the things we should point out here is that Purdue is one of, if not the only, state school in Indiana that has a higher percentage of non-Hoosiers than it has Hoosier students, and a large percentage of those are people from overseas who pay completely full freight, which is how the university is affording its quote-unquote tuition freeze.
Yeah. And that's kind of where I was going with this. You know, I went to Indiana State because I could afford to pay my own way that way. Other people come to Purdue University knowing the costs and are still in a financial position to be able to make that commitment. When you look at that and you look at some of the international students that are coming here, that in and of itself is a submarket of a relatively healthy overall market financially. And the oftentimes when you look at the markets and the trends in the markets, you realize that sometimes, regardless of what we do as community leaders or as academic leaders, the market dictates a lot of what goes on. And if when the folks that built these products didn't do their research, if they thought that they were building it because of what might happen, that is a hell of a risk that they're undertaking. I think that they have some assurances that they'll be able to keep those places full regardless of the economic trends.
While we're on the subject of money, I wanted to ask you sort of a goofy question about
the fact that I don't make any.
Oh, I saw in this
you've been cheating.
I saw in this same ordinance what you make.
I guess I'm buying lunch next time.
I guess so. So the city council passed its annual set of pay ordinances talking about who's going to make what. And there was one peculiarity I wanted to ask you about. I noticed that every member of the plan commission gets $40 a month, and the city council president also gets $40 a month. And clearly these are not full-time jobs for these folks, so we're not asking about paying them full salaries, but a couple things stick out. It seems a little odd that all the plan commission members get paid, but only one of the nine city council members gets paid. Is that inequitable? How did that possibly come to be?
The council president's, his responsibilities are a little bit more involved than the rest of the council.
Well, right, but it's on the other hand, it's $40 a month. You couldn't afford $40 times nine?
Well, probably, but a lot of that has to do with just, you know, tasks, assignments, time commitments, and things of that nature. The council president also serves in my stead. If I go down, he's the mayor until somebody else gets picked. And with some of the hobbies and interests that I have and some of my history, I think he probably is going to be asking for a raise real soon on that. But that's how it goes. And a lot of these ordinances were developed and created in a time long before I ever got here. And I'm sure probably when you think pre-technology, pre-connectivity, there's probably a lot more physical presence required than there is now. So that could be one of the reasons why.
It might be worth looking into those and determining whether they need to be updated.
You are wise, my friend. I'm going to get on that as soon as I leave here. No, I'm not.
The other people in the council would appreciate that.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot on another topic with the folks in Frankfurt about their situation with the Humane Society. I don't know if you've seen this at all. Mm. It has to do with money that comes from the county and from the city of Frankfurt to the Clinton County Humane Society for a couple of different things. And it turns out that there's, according to at least one city council member who we talked to, not a lot of oversight of how nonprofit organizations or NPOs get money and how they are fulfilling the duties that they said they would do when they get money from a municipality or from a county. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that we keep hearing from people in Frankfurt is, why aren't the elected leaders of the county or the city paying any more attention? Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask you other mayors on this program, in light of those conversations we've been having with folks in Frankfurt, when someone comes to you, if a nonprofit organization comes to the city of West Lafayette and says, we'd like a grant for XYZ, what are the requirements for you to decide whether they get that? And what must they do to show that they are using any money that the city gives them in the way that it was intended?
Anytime, whether it be the Humane Shelter, mental health organizations, some of the charitable events that we contribute to. We always ask for a pro forma. We always try to make sure that if we give them, if they are on our budget for a particular amount of money per year or per contract, regardless of the length of contract, they always have to submit the appropriate amount of documentation with spending plans to make sure that it's going to go in the right place. We also meet with their boards at least once a year to make sure that what our taxpayers are subsidizing is being spent appropriately.
Do you require an audit of any sort on a regular basis to show
we
from
ask
an
to
accountant?
Look at theirs. Yeah, we ask to look at theirs. You know, if our controller is pretty on target when it comes to things like that. The other thing that we do is a lot of these things, obviously, because if it's a contract, it's got to be approved in a public meeting. So we invite people to come up and say, hey, wait a second, you know, I had an experience with this organization that wasn't appropriate or something to that effect, that we take that into consideration as well.
And so that is sort of what has happened in Frankfurt. It came about due to the firing of an apparently well-liked executive director of the Humane Society, and then all of a sudden people started asking further questions about how all of this was transpiring. So can you recall a situation where your controller or anybody else has said, hey, there looks to be an irregularity here. Either can you explain it or can you tell me why I'm wrong to think that there's an irregularity here and thus maybe the money we gave you has not been going to the right place?
Not so much that, but in the past we have had issues where we signed multiple year contracts and the groups might come in erroneously reading the contract and coming in a year that was already covered. We've had things like that happen before. But, you know, there's so much stuff that people can do innocently, and then there's so many things that people can do maliciously and deliberately. That's where we like to make sure we take care of these things, and either through a request of a pro forma, having ongoing meetings with the folks. They usually, a lot of times what will happen is the presidents or the CEOs of these organizations will meet with me, and they'll bring some of their board members there, and they just go over their daily activity or their routine activity or some of the highs and lows of what they've been involved with. And then the other side of it is when I was in my former life with LPD, I was on the boards of a lot of these different commissions and things, and so I have a level of awareness about that. So it's not necessarily – there is a formal submittal process, but we usually have a lot more informal interactivity that lets us – keep aware of those sort of things.
How do you determine the difference between an innocent error and a malicious error?
By asking them. Well, no, honestly.
You just have to believe them?
No, not necessarily. I mean, some of these things, like when somebody comes in and asks for a contract renew when you're already currently under coverage of a contract, and when you say, oh, by the way, you circle it and say, what's this for? And they look at it and you can tell, oh, never mind. And the other thing is a lot of these boards and commissions and the charitable groups and the not-for-profits have a continuous revolving door of people. So we generally, when they meet with us, we generally have had more experience with that organization in some cases than their chair. So we're in a position to ask these questions, and they oftentimes have to do research to get back to us. And that's a great check and balance because they have to get into their own systems to get familiar with, to be able to respond to our questions.
It sounds a little like what you're saying is you try to watch them on the front end and say, just yes. So you know, we're watching, don't try any shenanigans.
There you go. And shenanigans are not good in local government.
They are not. On to one other thing that I wanted to spend our last couple of minutes on. There was an announcement last month in Indianapolis. An FCC commissioner came to visit, and he was lauding Indiana's stance toward implementing 5G cell phone service, which is going to be rolled out kind of end of this year, beginning of next year. And his proposal that he wants nationwide would disallow local units of government from barring the installation of this 5G infrastructure. This is something that an Indiana law already does, something you and I talked about a couple of years ago. Your city and about 100 others passed emergency legislation in the wake of the last budget. So let me ask you, do you think the FCC should be lauding a move that seems to eliminate local control, especially for tech that you and all of the other mayors I've talked to, Mayor Barton in Crawfordsville among them, you all say you want it, but you're like, don't force us to just put it on every single structure?
That's exactly right. I mean, the only reason why we opposed it is, first off, it came at the bottom of the ninth with two outs. That was a little weird. The other reason is that because we take great pride. I mean, when you talk about a community, a lot of it's the infrastructure, a lot of it's development, blah, blah, but a lot of it's appearance as well. And, you know, you can slap – some people don't realize that a micro tower isn't like, you know, one of those little tiny antennas that stick off of your windshield when you got a cell phone in there. They're still relatively substantial. We've got a lot of historic structures on our major corridors and our major arterials, and we just want to make sure before they slap an antenna on the historic caretaker's house up in the graveyard that we have some sort of say in it. You know, I am well aware of the fact that sometimes you're like the tiny mouse flipping off the big cat when it comes to fighting big government, but we still feel it's worthwhile to have those conversations and stand our ground on it.
So a few decades ago in the legislature, there was a big push to have home rule, as they sometimes refer to it. I've spoken a lot with former Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan about that, who was one of the leaders of
that push. Didn't you used to work down there?
I did work down there for a while.
Was he as nice to you as I am?
You're both very nice guys. And the idea is that...
He doesn't mention flipping off a cat, though, does he?
The idea in both cases is that the government of the locality gets to make and implement much of the rules as possible. Do you think that we're in a cycle, and it seems that there are peaks and valleys of this.
There is.
Do you think we're at the bottom of a cycle where some of that is being eroded in recent years more than it's being given to you?
No, I think a lot of it's being eroded. And it's like anything else. Sometimes people predicate any legislation and policy on the worst case scenario. You know, it's almost fear generation. It's like, well, if this one city or this one group can get away with it, we need to make sure that that never happens again, because look how catastrophic this was. So nobody's going to be able to do it.
Do you think that happened in the case of your city and 100 others signing emergency legislation about the micro towers?
I think so, because it is a good thing. Having connectivity across the state of Indiana with a high degree of dependability and a lot of reach and a lot of clarity is a good thing. But nobody's saying no to that. They're just saying, we'll figure out where they go. And we're not going to figure it out by just throwing darts at a board. It's going to be done with a degree of technology and expertise. But let us run our own gig.
So we've got a budget session of the legislature coming up. Is there any way for you and other lawmakers, other mayors, to signal that you want more home rule? Because the irony that you mentioned of the bottom of the ninth two outs is that this was done by your local state senator, then State Senator Brandt Hirschman. Mm-hmm. And it seems a lot to me like he's somebody who would talk about government overreach all the time. Mm-hmm. Boy, this sure seems like the pot calling the kettle black of somebody who's saying you can't make these rules. Mm-hmm. We're determining at the state what you and West Lafayette are not able to do. How do you communicate back to state lawmakers in this upcoming budget session of, hey, look, we're perfectly capable of making decisions that are going to benefit the city, the company, and the citizens all at the same time?
Well, we're pretty lucky around here. Those guys generally give us a call. You know, if something heavy is coming down, they give us a call and let us know what's going on. And they do represent us well. They let us know, hey, you know, Mayor Dennis, Mayor Wozworski, you know, they said not only not now, but no.
And hey, at least you have a new state senator in that seat.
Got that going on, yeah.
So somebody you can talk to, right?
There you go, yes.
So how do you get that message through that stop eroding home rule?
We just give them a call. You know, Indiana's an odd state. The Republicans have a supermajority down there. And so when we call, and everybody that represents us with the exception of Sheila is a Republican. So Tony and I have great relationships with these folks. And when we call them, they take us seriously because we've got a pretty good gig going on here. And that's also well known around the state. So they listen to our senators. They give us the appropriate amount of attention. Hopefully they see it our way.
All right, Mr. Mayor, thanks as always for your time. We'll talk to you at the beginning of next month. And we'll be sure to have our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Wozworski at this time next week here on WBAA News. Submit questions in advance of that program to ask@WBAA.org. You can also tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.